You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow, or find an awesome template. No judgment.
Hi, folks. Be sure to visit my webpage at dr-history.com for over 440 true stories of the Old West. Also, now available on Amazon, my first book, a historical fiction based on true events entitled Coal Miner to Cowboy. The story of a young man born in England in 1850. He wants to be a cowboy and makes his way to America, travels from New Orleans to Independence on a steamboat, hires on as a teamster to Santa Fe, then on a cattle drive to Bozeman, Montana. He also rides shotgun on a stagecoach. He travels with a wagon train, and on his two-year journey, he meets some famous people and keeps a journal of his adventures. The book contains a lot of the true stories from my podcast and is now available on Amazon. Visit my webpage for a link to Amazon for the book, Coal Miner to Cowboy.
And now, the world traveler, Dr. History.
Good morning, Zeb.
Where were you on your flight around the globe?
New Zealand, Australia, Tasmania. Beautiful country.
Really?
Yeah, beautiful country.
Tasmanian devils, did you see any of those?
Did not see. I saw kangaroos and koalas and wallabies.
Get in a boxing match with them?
Never did.
I see.
But it was a great trip. And I learned something interesting about the Aboriginals that is very comparable to our American Indians.
Really?
The Aboriginals had a lot of different tribes like we did here. Mm-hmm. And they also were wiped out to a great extent by the diseases, cholera, measles, smallpox, typhoid, all those things that came across with the Europeans, just like what happened here.
Did you see any Crocodile Dundees?
No.
Oh, okay.
But went to the Sydney Opera House and had a performance there with a guy that I'd never heard of, but it was fun.
Now, did you, all of this was by air or did you cruise?
No, we flew to Sydney and then got on a cruise ship and went down to Melbourne, then to Tasmania, then on over to New Zealand.
Now, down by Melbourne, did you see any great white sharks?
We did not, but we didn't go out in the ocean at all.
I mean,
as far as swimming or anything like that.
I see.
No.
Well, no, I wouldn't expect you would.
No.
But did you enjoy the trip?
It was good. We saw some beautiful scenery. The ship went into some of these fjords and these sounds that were just beautiful, high mountains on each side. So it was a great trip.
Well, it's good to have you back.
Good to be back. It's always good to be home.
What are we going to talk about this morning?
Well, let me show you a picture, and you just guess.
Oh, that's William S. Hart.
Yes, it is.
Well, I had to tell you.
Well, I had to look and make sure. So we're going to talk about Hollywood.
Yeah.
And movies.
Show you a picture. I tell you who it is, and you go, oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that is who it is. Okay. So here we go. We're in the early 1900s.
Yep.
Okay. The cowhands drifted into Hollywood after 1910 to become mounted extras in the early Western movies. And the town's odd new industry made stars out of a few of them. But these men had not come to California to be actors.
Can I interrupt you and have you turn that mic down just a little bit?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Thank you.
So the cowhands, they were kind of refugees from the declining ranches and rodeos and Wild West shows. And they'd heard that the studios would pay a man $5 a day plus a box lunch for riding and roping. And so they headed for the coast. And that was good money, actually,
absolutely.
Back then. So they looked upon Hollywood as a kind of a last trail town. They created a closed society of their own in which a man was judged by the way he rode a horse, used his fists, held his liquor. They drank and played poker at a cafe called the Waterhole, where tequila and mezcal were served in coffee cups through the long years of Prohibition. They bought fancy foot gear, fancy boots from good bootmakers. They creased their Stetsons to show what part of the cattle country they had come from.
Absolutely.
So, folks, if you didn't know that, the way a guy wore his hat told you where he came from.
You could tell someone from Texas and or Montana.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, but generally, they did what they could to make themselves at home off the range as they grew used to new bosses who yelled at them through megaphones.
Yep.
So, now, employment was uncertain since it was mostly obtained by hanging around this place called the Waterhole or a horse barn on Sunset Boulevard until some studio sent an automobile to pick up riders or by sitting in a wire cage at Universal's San Fernando Valley lot to wait for directors who needed who were filming westerns.
Sitting in a wire cage?
Yeah, I wondered about that.
Yeah, I'm wondering about it too.
Yeah, so evidently that was a place to hang out till somebody came and said, hey,
not for long.
We need a few cowboys. So, but still, the pay was better than any of them had ever earned. You know, punching cattle as a cowboy.
Sure.
And movie people paid them a lot more for falling off broncs, falling off horses, than they ever had been paid for staying on them.
One of the most famous stuntmen in history, and maybe you're going to mention his name, I don't know, that was also world's champion, bronc rider and everything else, Yakima Canutt.
Okay.
Remember
I'm going to talk about some other guys that were good, too. But, you know, a man with a reputation for skill and daring was given a lot of opportunity to demonstrate. But think about this. A six-horse team pulling a stagecoach was just as dangerous on a Hollywood set as it had been coming out of Deadwood or Cheyenne.
Oh, absolutely.
Any place. I mean, these guys had to know what they're doing
absolutely. On
these in these movies. And the stunts, you know, it demanded a rare combination of recklessness and precision from these men who performed these stunts.
Absolutely.
So, now, the simplest and most common stunt, and I've always wondered about this, and maybe this will answer, it answers my question, involved the use of a notorious device known as the running W.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It was a pair of wires attached to hobbles on a horse's front feet and connected to a ring that the rider held in one hand after getting on his horse, and men destined to bite the dust while tearing along at a gallop simply kicked their feet free of their stirrups, aimed one shoulder at the ground, tipped the horse by yanking on the wires and hoped they would not break any bones as the horse went down.
Yeah, it's been outlawed now.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, you look at some of those old movies, you know, and you watch these horses going down.
Yeah. You know, some of the old movies really still in the movies, and I'm trying to think of some of the names I can relate to you, where they have wagon wrecks and everything. Many of those stuntmen were actually really seriously injured, and some were even killed.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah.
So, now, there was a variation of this bit of stagecraft called the stationary double W, or the dead man fall. And it was more dangerous yet. The tripping device was anchored to a buried post by 80 or 100 yards of piano wire, and the rider was catapulted out of the saddle without warning as the horse was slammed to the earth.
Yeah.
So they didn't know when they were going to hit that wire.
That's right. And that's why I'm glad that they've outlawed a lot of those absolutely heinous.
I mean, it had to be hard on the horses.
Oh, it's terrible.
Yeah.
Terrible.
But the men who took the risks lived by their own hard code, and they judged others by it, too. They expected directors or stars to treat them right, to not be uppity, I guess.
Right.
To treat them as skilled workers. So, but they considered William S. Hart, the guy I just showed you a picture of.
The one I had to tell you who it was.
The one you had to tell me. As an Easterner, though he had spent his boyhood in the West and honored its traditions as much as any of them, they accused Cecil B. DeMille of demanding writing scenes likely to result in unscripted accidents.
Yeah.
Okay, and perhaps awful enough to satisfy his sense of theater without paying the extra wages awarded for planned stunts. So these guys didn't know when they were going to go down, and they didn't get paid extra if their horse went down.
Right.
So Now, they did like a young director, again, a guy named John Ford, because he had talent. But there were two roughnecks, and I'm sure you've heard of these, one named Hoot Gibson.
Right.
And another one named Art Accord.
Yep.
And they were the sort of Hollywood celebrities that could really do the job and take to heart.
And Hoot Gibson developed into his own star, if you will, after he did all the stunt work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Edmund Richard Hoot Gibson
right.
was one of the most successful.
The name Edmund would have never sold.
It wouldn't have sold. Yeah. So, you know, he was a Western hero. He possessed something of Will Rogers, some humor, and actually made millions.
Yeah.
All eventually lost, unfortunately, starring in lots of low-budget horse shows in the 1920s, the 30s, and even up into the early 40s.
You mentioned John Ford, and you know that John Ford was really instrumental in the big John Wayne movies.
Okay, yeah.
You know, like Rio Grande and Hondo and all those.
Yeah.
And you know who one of the big, big stuntmen was for John Ford that went on to be an Academy Award-winning actor?
I don't.
Ben Johnson.
Oh, okay. Yep. Yeah. So the other guy, Artemus Ward Accord was his name, and he had none of the on-screen humor that the other guys had. He was kind of he was a bit violent. He kind of fell prey to liquor and drugs and vanished into Mexico, where he died in 1931.
Vanished into Mexico?
Yeah, he supposedly got stabbed to death.
Oh, my.
But both these men were Westerners. Now, Gibson, having grown up in Nebraska, and Accord was raised in Oklahoma, and both had punched cattle, both had worked in Wild West shows, and both had broken into pictures as extras and stuntmen. They were also great riders, mm-hmm. okay? Gibson had been judged best all-around cowboy at the Pendleton Roundup in 1912, and Accord beat Gibson for the same title in 1916. So these weren't just local yokels.
That's
These were great rodeo men.
Well, Ben Johnson was a world champion team roper.
Okay, so they knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
But in the minds of many cowboys who had seen these guys in action, they were the greatest of all of the Western horsemen. They were good and respected by the other cowboys. But their rodeo rivalry continued to Hollywood, where they found themselves together on a Universal lot. They competed not as movie stars vying for big box office, but as two cowhands just off the range, each bent on proving himself better than the other guy.
Yeah.
So there was a bit of a rivalry.
Sure.
So Gibson earned a reputation for recklessness from his early days as a stuntman. A director offered him $5 on one occasion to let himself be dragged by a galloping horse.
Mm-hmm.
And here's what he said. "Make it 10, said Hoot, "and I'll let him kick me to death." Now, Accord was known to be even more willfully self-destructive. He was celebrated for sticking to a bucking horse that carried him through 6 strands of barbed wire fence. And he stayed on the horse. But the two actors achieved a mutual notoriety at Universal for the way they went after each other with their fists. Okay, that may not have been a lot of acting.
They were known to party hardy.
That's probably a good way to say it. Accord once marched onto a set where his colleague was working and shouted, quote, "Gibson, I can whip your hind end."
Uh-huh. Now, let me see. Is that the actual
verbiage? I'm not going to show you.
I see.
He took a wild swing and broke his hand on a stable post.
Ouch.
Gibson bellowed, quote, "Good, you son of a gun," and hammered his foe.
We're rewriting and censoring.
History.
Yes.
But men like Gibson and Accord are remembered for more for their recklessness. They were central participants in the Western myth. Their movie images gave permanent life to the basic elements, you know, the basic things you always saw in movies. The gunfight in the dusty street,
mm-hmm.
the encircled wagon train, the holdup of the stagecoach, the confrontation of the frontier saloon. the defense of the young woman.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
The clash of the posse and the rustlers or the cavalry whooping down, to rescue him from an Indian attack. So, but no matter how far from history, truth, Hollywood's myth makers might make, it was entertainment.
And they really, the stuntmen of the days gone and the old days, even up to today, they never really receive, I think, the accolades that they deserve.
Well, the danger.
Oh.
And back then, you know, they did what they did, and it wasn't always safe.
I'm trying to think of the stuntman, and I know a little bit about him and his family, and I can't think of his name to save my life. He developed that stunt of jumping from the runaway stagecoach onto the back of the horses, and then sliding underneath. You've seen this, I know, on a couple of movies, and catching the lines underneath and going all the way back to the end of the stagecoach and then back up on top again.
Oh, and actually, I told a story about this once a while back about a guy that actually did that, real life, years ago. But, you know, the sagas of Hollywood of the West played out against real mountains and real deserts. They were peopled by men who rode, dressed, and bellied up to the saloons as if they worked for the Aztec Land and Cattle Company itself, as indeed some of them had worked for that company. But the men who made Westerns were engaged in entertainment. For all that, and since the movies were based on concepts of theater rather than concepts of history, and we've talked about that, you and I both prefer the movies that are based on history, and they're historically accurate.
Amen.
But back then, it was just, it was entertainment.
Yeah, that's right.
So, you know, back then, New York was actually the film capital of the United States in the early years. And after Edison invented this thing called the kinetoscope, they adapted it to project moving pictures on a screen. They celebrated early Westerns. The one that I think a lot of us remember is one called The Great Train Robbery, one of the very, very first.
Right.
It was shot on a section of the Delaware and Lackawanna Railroad near Dover, New Jersey, clear back east.
Right.
But before The Great Train Robbery appeared in 1903, kinetoscopes and primitive theaters showed minute-long shows with titles like Procession of the Mounted Indians and Cowboys.
Oh, my.
Calf Branding.
Browning?
Browning.
That's a new
one. Buffalo
word.
Bill and Escort and Cripple Creek Barroom.
Oh, yes.
But The Great Train Robbery ran a full 9 minutes.
Yeah, it's a feature-length film.
Feature-length. Full 9 minutes. And its director was an editor, Edison engineer named Edwin S. Porter, and he gave it a lot of suspense. I mean, it was a thriller, you can imagine. And he invented methods of visual narration that quickly became part of the basic grammar of the movies. Porter did not use subtitles, and I didn't know that. He told his story by cutting from scene to scene in violation of strict chronology with only the logic of the story to carry the audience along. So here's what he did. The picture shifts from a railroad telegraph office where bandits bind and gag the operator to the approaching train and the holdup, back to the telegraph office as the operator is freed by his little daughter, then to a saloon with the operator arriving to summon some avenging cowboys, back to the train as the robbers make their escape, and on to a chase and gun battle by which justice triumphs in the end.
I love the way you said that. I'll throw a movie at you and see if you remember. Remember the movie John Wayne and the Cowboys?
Oh, yeah.
Remember that movie?
Yeah.
Well, do you know who did and who was contracted? Not only as one of the cowboys, but he also did all the roping sequences in the movie.
Nope.
Was world's champion Clay O'Brien Cooper.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was one of the young cowboys.
Huh.
And he would leave the set during the shooting of the movie and actually attend team ropings as a little boy in his age bracket way back then, and then he'd go back and do the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, like I say, they had to use experts.
Absolutely.
In the field. But this movie, The Great Train Robbery, cost $150 to produce.
The whole thing?
Yeah. It was an instant sensation, more so because of the way audience screamed and fainted during the close-ups.
Fainted? Oh, my.
You know, you got a bandit firing his pistol directly at the camera.
Oh, my.
You know, the picture inspired a lot of imitations, like the Little Train robbery, the Bold Bank robbery, the holdup of the Rocky Mountain Express, and a second great train robbery. But the successful as the great train robbery was, and its imitators were, they still lacked a crucial element. They needed a hero.
Oh, yeah, okay. We got to have a hero.
And who, you know, is going to make the Western an instrument of mass entertainment for decades to come. And
let's do another segment on this next week.
You know, I was going to say, I'm running out of time, and but you got to have a hero.
You got to.
But you
got to
have a bad guy, you know. And
they still do that.
And you look at the movies, there's certain actors that are great at playing the bad guy.
They're tailor-made for being bad guys.
But then there's the good-looking hero, you know.
And normally in real life, they're the bad guys.
that does happen. So, yeah, we'll continue this a little more next week about the movie industry and how it evolved.
I'll tell you a guy that's really done a lot to further Westerns modern-day time. Of course, now he's almost semi-retired. He does a TV series called The Blue Bloods, and that's Tom Selleck.
Oh, yeah.
But he produced and directed and really was in charge of a lot of great Westerns, and I really respect
him. He did the one Quigley Down Under.
Did Quigley Down Under, and I really like his take on the great Western Monty Walsh.
Well, and I've read stories about him that he insists on historically accurate saddles, bridles.
The clothing, the everything.
Has to be
you're
accurate.
100% right. Yeah. You're right. And I really admire him for that.
Yeah.
I got to run.
Yep.
Dr. History, you have no idea how nice it's to have you back from New Zealand.
Glad to be back.
All right, buddy. Thank you so much.
Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP lawn and garden and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals.
Save big.